Digital stance, getting firewalled, ho, cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. The CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RAMs, zip, SIPs.
Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 15. I am your MC, the man in the center stage, the man with the top hat. Direct your attention to the three-ring circus behind me, where I am joined this week by the spectacular, amazing Voodoo Hal in the house.
What's up, everybody?
Back again. Had a good episode last time and had some topics that I thought you and I could expand on again this week, so back on again, hopefully more often as well. I think we probably, because this is one of the topics that I think you and I both can agree on and talk about together, jump right into the email that we got this week, at least one. We got an email from Locke, and actually about, it was after the show, after the last show that you and I did together. Sent us an email, and of a question that, frankly, we get a lot, at least I get a lot. The long and short of the question is the old college versus certification question. Should I get a college degree? Is it better to go to trade or technical school? Is it better to just get the certifications and stuff like that? And we've been through this in the forums before. I've had personal emails to me in the past asking this question, and I thought it would be good to have you on the show and talk about it, open up the show with this topic, because it's very, obviously, a lot of people have this question and don't understand, people who haven't been in the tech industry. So I think maybe we could clear it up once and for all, so to speak, or at least give our opinions on it, not that that's necessarily the end-all be-all. I guess, you know what, I think, why don't you start with this, because I think you and I probably will agree on this pretty well, but for if it comes down to a simple question, which choice would you make coming out of high school? Would you start into college in a computer field, or would you put money into going on a certification spree, so to speak?
Well, personally, I believe that college holds a lot more weight than certifications do. You've been in the industry a while, so you know, basically, before the dot-com flop, certifications were heavily weighted by just about everybody, and that's what was kind of scary. And that also created these places where you could go $10,000 down and you come out with a certification. You may not know shit about what you're talking about, but you've got a certification. And I think now that's caused so much problem that certifications aren't really worth that much of anything without a degree to back it.
Yeah, it really is true. I mean, if you've never taken a certification, it basically goes like this. You will pay for a class kind of similar to you as the same thing you would do at college, except these classes are very much, oh gosh, I can't even think of a good adjective to describe. They're very linear, very focused, and very linear in the subject matter. They will give you a book or two that are start at chapter one, page one, and just start reading straight through the book. Now, they will sometimes have classes to go along with it. The majority of the ones I've seen are, for the most part, self-taught. You may come into a class every week or every 2 weeks with questions or something like that, but for the most part, it's an all on you. So, college is like that, too. I mean, it's very much different than high school. You're going into college, you're going into the real world, everything is on you. You're not going to have teachers there the next day to say, you know, where's your homework? You know, where's that assignment I gave you? It's going to be all on you to study either one of these. But even worse than the certification field, you have a tendency of putting that book down when you get home. And the way it works is, on a set date, 2 or 3 months later, you will go in and you will take a test that is very literal and, in my opinion, does nothing more than test your memorization skills from what you went over in those books. I've met a lot of people that have certification, and they can ramble off and memorize every port of every whatever, but then you try to ask them what it's used for or what that means and stuff like that, and they really don't know. So there's good knowledge to be had there, but I don't think it can stand alone.
Well, I think higher education also helps for understanding of what you're talking about. Most of the certification classes seem to be pretty test-centric. They want to teach you how to pass the test. It's all about money. As long as you know how to pass the test, that's all they care about. They don't care if you know the subject matter down to the core. They just want you to pass that test. And academia, I mean, that's the great part. You may start up slowly, and you may build on that, but you understand what you're doing. You're not just left in the world with these certain facts about how to do something and not really know, well, what do these do?
Well, ideally, hopefully. Right. And therein comes in the factor of quality of schools and quality of education. There is a difference between one college and another. Some are good, some are not. You know, and instructors within the college. There are some colleges are very bad, but they will still have good instructors. So it is an issue of balance, like everything else. I know a lot of people I've spoken to hate college or have hated college in the past because they didn't feel that it taught them enough application. College, in my experience, is very much teaching theory, teaching fundamentals, teaching a foundation and basics for which you to understand, for which you are to build on, to expand on that knowledge. So, to me, it really is a natural progression from high school to college, if that is what you're going to do, if that's your plans or your, you know, what you're thinking about. Go into college and you're going to build on the foundation from high school. I know you might not believe it right now, and you're thinking you're trying to escape from high school, but believe it or not, you are going to move on in college, and they're going to teach you fundamentals and basics. And I'm, you know, assuming most people listening to this are going to be engineering majors, computer science, computer information systems majors. You're going to move in and you're going to start with very basic stuff. Your first year or two, you're going to be very frustrated with college because they're going to go back and teach you fundamental networking and fundamental programming concepts and fundamental operating system interaction that you already know. But they need to reaffirm that and reassure that you know those fundamentals as it moves into some of the higher level classes. Like I said, with the certification, it's memorize this, and we will test you on it and give you a certificate. So, if you don't like the idea of you doing a lot of theory and not enough application, you might want to combine the two, because again, you and I, we've been in the technical field, we've been in the industry for a while, and I know absolutely, undoubtedly, for a fact, that a college degree opens the door.
Definitely.
It absolutely does. I mean, it may be my opinion on what's more valuable or what might be appropriate to you is your decision to make, but I can almost state, almost as a matter of fact, that without a college degree, you can have all the certificates in the world. But without that college degree, they don't know that you have the foundation that they need to get the job done. They know that you can memorize very well because you've memorized for that certification. And how long ago did you get that? Because the majority of them only last a limited time. You know, some people will cram. I know people that just blew me away. They would spend one night studying the night before the test and memorize everything, come in and ace the test, and then the next day, no joke, they can't tell you the first thing about what they just studied.
Yeah, I've seen that quite a few times as well.
So, and that's just the next day. When you got these certificates, you know, a year later, 6 months later even, you know, if you don't use all that kind of stuff, you're not going to remember a lot of it. So the value of them is, you know, it's hit and miss. Are they a good thing? Absolutely. Education in any way, shape, or form is a very good thing. But, personally, my opinion and my advice, and please feel free to correct me or disagree with me, but my advice is, if you're coming out of high school, or even if you're not, even if you're just considering going back to high school or going back to college or starting college for the first time, or, you know, you have these options in front of you, I recommend going to college. Even if it's just for an associate's degree, a two-year degree. If nothing else, at least go get that. And then either afterwards or, in best case scenario, if you can afford the time to do it, take a certification class or two while you're in college. Treat it as though it's a fifth or sixth class that you're taking. And when you come out, you will have a college degree and certification. I mean, A-plus certification is you know, not that difficult. There is a lot of memorization to it, don't get me wrong, it's not simple, but I think you will be learning a good combination of theory and application, and you'll come out better in the long run.
Definitely, more complete.
Yeah, because majority of jobs are going to say, first and foremost, the minimum requirements, you must have a bachelor's degree. You must have an associate's degree or equivalent, something like that. And certification will not substitute for that equivalent. Experience might, but again, it's hard to get that experience without that degree in the first place. So it's a catch-22. Definitely want to get a degree and get your foot in the door. Tech schools and trade schools are very risky. They usually have job placement services that are very helpful. They can put you directly in a job as you graduate because employers know that you've learned very specific things that they want and they need, and they have relationships. They can get your foot in the door and get you a job and build up some experience that later on, when you try to go for a job that wants a bachelor's degree or 4 years of experience, you have a little bit more wiggle room there. You can always say, no, I went to a trade school, but I've been in the industry for 4 years or 8 years or whatever. So that also is a good option. You might consider a technical or trade school, but I still say the number one option would be a college degree.
Yeah, definitely. I've actually got a family member who went to one of the larger trade schools. I'll keep the name out just in case. But for $30,000, he ends up getting an associate's degree and has absolutely no idea what he's doing. None. Yeah. But, I guess it depends on the school.
Right, and you know, don't belittle the fact that the choice of school that you go to makes a difference. I know Mute is taking it very seriously and has been putting in applications, and congratulations to him. He's been accepted to a couple different schools so he can kind of make some good choices. That's not to say there's anything wrong. I went to the first school I went to, I want to get into my whole personal whining or whatever, but I started off at a community college for whatever reason, financial reasons, and I got a better education there than I ended up going to a four-year institution. Now, I've been since then to a couple other four-year institutions here and there, but I had a great community college when I went up. There's nothing wrong with a community college. If anything, I could recommend that to people because, like I said, when you go in and start taking classes, the first thing you take are going to be fundamentals and basics. Everybody has to take English 1, Writing 101, whatever they want to call it. English 101, Writing 101, Composition 101, whatever they want to call it. You're going to have to take that no matter what. It might be a good idea, especially, and very, very economical, to go to a community college and take some of those classes. Make sure they'll transfer over to your college of choice when you're ready, but take a couple of those basic classes, maybe the intro to computer classes and stuff that you know is going to be simple, and transfer it over, and you'll save yourself a lot of money in the process. And you'll get a good feeling, good introduction to college, smaller classes. You know, there's a lot of important decisions to be made at this point in your life, and don't belittle it. Don't belittle it. My advice is check out local colleges, make a decision on what direction you want to go, and certification should really be secondary in your mind, I think. Oh, man, boy, we jumped into a serious topic to start the show off. How'd that happen?
At least we got it started on the right foot, right?
Yeah, I hope so. That's serious. I really don't want to belittle it. That is a very serious question, and I get it a lot, and that's my answer. College is first and foremost, in my opinion, and Duel and I have talked about this briefly on the show before. You and I have now talked about this. We are people who've been in the industry. In the forums we've talked about, you know, take it from people who have been there. You know, other people that go to a tech school or go to certification classes and go to college, they're in the middle of it and they're kind of biased. They kind of are not sure how it's going to affect them because they haven't been out of it yet. We've been out of it. We've been there. We've been to colleges, we've been to universities, we've been to trade and tech schools, we've been to certification seminars and classes. I know the weight that all of them carry, and after the fact, you've heard my opinion, so we won't beat that horse to death. I'll move on to some more housekeeping stuff. When you're listening to this, hopefully, knock on wood, hopefully, I will have updated binrev.com to hopefully the final steady version where I won't have to be doing this maintenance every single weekend and changes and updates. As the regular listeners know, I've been slowly moving things over to this new host. I've got most everything moved over. At the same time, I was taking some stuff off of StankDog.com and moving them over to BenRef. I want it to be the one central place for everything. And I am pretty much done with that. The last and biggest headache of all of them was the forums itself, or were the forums themselves. So I did that this past weekend, and they seem to be up and stable. I will change the links on the site. I will add the gallery to the site. It should be done, again, knock on wood, by the time you're listening to this. So that's what I have been doing. I put up a redirect page on the oldstankdog.com. Anybody has links to that, it's going to come up. It's not going to automatically redirect you. Okay, you're going to have to click on it. I might change that. I'm not sure. But if you go to the index.php, it does automatically redirect you. So anyway, I'm going to be redirected, but if you can change any links going to stankdog.com forums, please leave links to stankdog.com if you wish. I would still love to have that, but maybe add one to the benrev.com site as well. And that, I guess that's a good segue into what I've been doing this week, because I basically just told you. Adding all this stuff to the site and updating the site and everything. I put up a couple weeks ago, I mentioned on the show, that I finally put up the gallery, kind of a little project that I thought would be kind of fun. And that still needs some organization done to it. But more importantly than that, I have a security issue on that as well. And it's not such a bad thing, really. I mean, I knew going into it that the potential existed. I created some forums. I guess I shouldn't call them forums. Galleries is what they're called. I'm not quite comfortable with that term. But I created some galleries that are owned by the admin. And then within those galleries, I intentionally opened it up to let everyone have read-write access to that. So my envision was that anybody who wants to can create sub-galleries and upload pictures to those galleries and, add to the site, add content to it, and share with everyone. And the people in the forums, I trust. You know, I know some people have been having some fun with it lately, and I don't mind that at all. I really don't, so if anybody misunderstands that. But what it did open my eyes to was that the people in the forums are going to play with it. That's fine, but there's also nothing stopping anybody from coming outside of the doghouse. Anybody coming from outside of our little circle and coming in there and doing the same thing. And they might not be so playful. They might not be so... they might not have that hacker ethic of not destroying the place where you hang out or not destroying, you know, things that other people are using. So I'm faced with a dilemma now of how to handle this. I could lock the whole thing down and create accounts and stuff like we do with the forums, but unfortunately the software is not programmed to do that. And yes, I could write a lot of routines and stuff to do that, but it's just very time consuming, and I'm basically writing the software for them, or writing a whole module and plugin for it, and it's just way too time consuming. So I got to come up with a way to allow people to put posts in there and upload posts. Maybe I should put like a holding area. I mean, have you been following this? Do you know, I mean, do you have any advice on how I should? I was thinking of maybe putting a holding area that everybody could upload to, and then only the admin or only a few select users could move them to the proper forums. You know what I'm saying?
Right, I was thinking the same way, like with some FTP sites do with an upload directory, and that's the only thing you have write access to. Which makes sense, in a way. It does bring, depending on how many pictures get posted, you know, it does bring quite a bit of work onto you or some of the other moderators.
Right.
But I think that would be the safest way to do it.
Yeah, it would, but yeah, you're right, it would be a lot of maintenance from me, and when people post or upload pictures, they like to, at the same time, go over to the forums and say, hey, look at my screenshot I just posted, here's the link. Well, then I'm going to go behind them and move it, which I did earlier this week and forgot to tell the person or forgot to update their link in the forums. So start moving stuff around, and you can't really rely on the links, and that's a problem too. So it's like, there's no happy solution here. So I'm going to be thinking this through for the next week or so. If anybody has any suggestions or ideas, I'd love to hear them. Maybe Gallery is not the software package that I should be using. I might also be looking for something if I can find another similar package that supports user accounts and therefore accountability. Maybe I'll just try a different software package.
Right.
So that's an option too.
Maybe if you had a way to, for instance, rather than just requiring registered users, because obviously if somebody wanted to do something, you can come on and register and post or put images away. Maybe if you could do it based on user count, or I'm sorry, post count. So, for instance, if someone had more than 20 posts, then you know that they're active on the list. But I don't really know how that would, how the other people would feel about that.
Yeah, and I could write that. I could check against the forums database. There is a table with the username and stuff like that, and I could query against that, validate, authenticate against that, and but I mean, again, that entails writing a module to do that, and then plugging that into the existing gallery software.
Right.
So that is not exactly a small undertaking. Even though it seems like simple, straightforward software, it just shows pictures. It's not never as simple as it looks.
What is it written in, PHP?
It is, majority of it is PHP, but another thing I was surprised and a bit disappointed at was that it doesn't even use, I was expecting it to be a MySQL database or a PostGRE or something. It doesn't. It's basically a flat text file, a flat file with some settings on it, and kind of on-the-fly data directory reading and stuff. So it's not exactly as deep and complex as I had hoped. But yeah, the majority of it is written in PHP. So I like it a lot, though. I do like the functionality. I like having the pictures. Some people have uploaded pictures of their desktops, some screenshots, stuff like that. Very cool stuff to look at. And I think it was Decoder had said, you know, he might have some clip art to put up. I was thinking of making a clip art gallery because we could use it for the magazine. We could use it for anybody writing reports for school and stuff like that. You got clip art that you can put in there. It would be great. You know, it's not just photography and pictures. It can be, you know, pretty much anything we want to upload. So, so far I'm cool, and I think it has a lot of potential. I'm very cool with it. I hope it grows. I hope people start taking advantage of it. I think once I put the link up on the nav bar, so that it's much more easily accessible and much more visible, because right now it's out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
So people don't visit it a lot. But I think once we get it up, it could be very, very cool. Another housekeeping. This is kind of a big one, actually. I got an email this week from Rant Radio, and Rant Radio is making a pretty big change in their structure. We'll give more details later, but the short version... Well, you can go to rantradio.com and check it out for yourself. But the short version is that they're going to split their channels up. They're going to split to the Rant Radio Industrial channel. They're going to separate the music from the talk shows. So, I guess it probably is frustrating if somebody wants to come listen to the music, and all of a sudden we interrupt with Binary Revolution Radio, as we do every Tuesday night. Then it could be frustrating for them. And at the same time, people who are tuning in to listen to the radio shows, whichever shows they're listening to, there's a lot of great shows on Rant Radio, they might not be a fan of that particular genre of music. So I think it's actually kind of a good idea. They're going to separate the talk shows, I guess, for lack of a better term. I hate saying that. It makes me sound like Oprah or something. But separate the talk shows, or the discussion, the analysis, whatever, to separate the ranting, the good shows, to a different channel, and separating good music to a different channel so people can stay tuned in to one or the other. And one of their goals too is to be able to replay the shows more often. So as soon as this comes to be, I will of course announce it and put up new instructions. I don't know how the servers are going to change, if at all, so we'll address all that when it happens. But I wanted to kind of put everybody on notice, let them know that that's coming. Let's see. Not that anybody cares, but I got an A on my cyber law test. I've been talking about my cyber law class lately. It's kind of funny because one of the biggest topics we constantly talk about is copyright law, intellectual property law in general. So before I go giving away any of the questions or information on the test, I'm gonna touch base with my instructor and get permission to use that stuff on the air or maybe on the site. It's a 4-question essay test that was very interesting, and very interesting, and I think it's something that actually the listeners would be interested to know. There's some surprising information, so I might share that. And what else? Oh, also, I probably should have mentioned this last week. I mentioned going to Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando. But on the way, it was a very fun trip because I did not rush. We just took our time driving up there, and we stopped at all the rest stops along the way and the truck stops and stuff like that. You can find a lot of interesting stuff. And we stopped at some of the rest stops along the way, and there's a kiosk at pretty much every one of them. I do not know the company. I did not write down the name of the company. These places are packed. There are so many people on this highways and stuff that this place is just packed with people, so we didn't have a whole lot of luxury to play too much. But basically through the kiosk you could order tickets to Disney World and places like that. It was things that you could access for free. Local store information, I think there was, you can access a map of the local area, stuff like that. And then it also functioned like most internet kiosks where you pay for so many minutes and you could get internet access to check your mail and stuff like that. I didn't see anybody paying to use any of them at any time. Maybe because we were on it a little bit, but even so, we were standing there watching and eating. I never saw anybody go up to it and use it, so I'm skeptical of how successful they are. But maybe they're not successful for this reason, because we went over there, and basically by going through the free areas, I found a little back door, a loophole that would let me out to the internet without authenticating off of anything. So that was pretty handy. I posted to the forum basically by going through some of their local sites. I went through, actually, one of the examples I got through was CNN.com. They allowed you to go to CNN's homepage to see news headlines. Well, also on CNN headline, also on CNN's homepage is a Google search link. So by the Google search link, when I search for my site, bam, I bypassed authentication because it still thinks I'm going through CNN.com. And you don't have to authenticate through CNN. I'm actually, CNN is acting as a proxy server for me. So it doesn't know that I'm actually off of CNN. It puts it within a window with a CNN logo, and it still thinks I'm going through CNN.com, which is a free area as far as it's concerned. So it's not exactly rocket science, but it is definitely a big loophole that they missed and worked consistently on every kiosk all the way up there. So that was very fun. I just love kiosks. I love playing with kiosks. I've never found a kiosk yet that could stop me. I hate bringing this up again, but I apparently I'm so permanently traumatized. Thank you again, Decoder. While I was on the kiosk, I briefly considered, and not only did I consider, I actually did it. I loaded up the picture, and I'll just leave it at that. The picture. The weightlifter. And Mr. VTech and I went, and actually, it was his idea. He made me do it. I'm going to blame him. I brought it up on screen, and I was going to just walk off and leave it there for all the world to enjoy, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't put that kind of torture on anyone else. I mean, I wouldn't be able to sleep. I can't sleep at night anyway. I sure don't want to put that kind of torture on someone else. And there were children around. I don't want anybody to see anything like that. I don't want an adult to see anything like that. But I did think about it. It was kind of funny. We joked about it, but I didn't actually go through to do that.
I wonder if the traumatization you would cause would be considered an act of terrorism, because I'm sure you'd traumatize lots and lots of people.
Yeah, that's...
Even the ones trying to close the browser itself.
Yeah, right? It probably wouldn't have stayed up that long if I noticed. If you left the thing idle for too long, it would go into demo mode and restart from its home page. So it probably wouldn't have stayed up but maybe a minute. But yeah, it would have been long enough, somebody would have seen it probably. And there was actually a big plasma screen above the monitor. Above your head so that people behind could see, but it was not a mirror of what you were doing on the screen. It was just an ad. Someone was feeding advertisements and commercials to it. So it would have really been disgusting if I could have brought it up on big, full-color plasma screen for the whole room, the whole building to enjoy.
That's just evil.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get off of the evil topics. Why don't you tell us? I know you've got big plans coming up this week. Why don't you tell us what you've got in store?
Right. The 24th through 26th of this month is HackerCon in Nashville by the name of Freaknik, hosted by the Southeast 2600 group. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wish I could go. I'm in the Southeast. You think I should be able to make it, but I'm just not going to be able to make it, unfortunately.
That's actually a pretty decent drive for you.
Yes, it is.
I'd like to get as many people out from the DDP as possible, but everybody's so spread out. Trying to get to Tennessee for anything is kind of maybe not difficult, but, you know.
Yeah, it comes back to the old majority of us do work for a living, work all day, and getting off of work and working our schedules together is tough. We don't have that luxury of dropping what you, hey, you want to go do this weekend? Sure, and we just take up and leave. It's not quite that as easy anymore, so maybe we can plan. I know we've already discussed and planned on going to the next Hope Conference whenever they announce it or whenever it and wherever it happens to be. I'm sure New York again. And for the next DEF CON. But I guess we got to start planning these things out ahead of time. And also, I'd like to start planning on maybe working out some presentations for them as well. But, yeah, we got to do it ahead of time, unfortunately. I don't know if that's a sign of old age that we have to schedule and plan everything, or sounds like a yuppie kind of, let me pencil you in, Muffy. I don't know if I'm going to be available that weekend. But, unfortunately, that is the way it's the reality of the world right now. But you are going to meet, weren't you? You were going to meet up with a couple people there, right?
Locke. I think we're going to be splitting a hotel room with Ben and Locke on the DDP forums now.
All right, we're just talking about.
Hopefully, somebody else will show up.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of people there.
Yeah.
Maybe we should send some copies of Binary Revolution, huh? Might be a good possibility to get some of those out, get the word out.
I am volunteering at the door, so
yeah. That would be very cool. Very cool. We got to think. You know what? We'll have to talk about that after the show. I didn't think about that, but that's definitely an opportunity there. And how long is that? You said it was the 24th? Is that?
Yep, Friday, Saturday, and part of Sunday.
So you're going to be heading up Thursday or Friday?
I'll be heading up Friday right after I get off work, because I get off at 7 a.m.
So. Yeah, been there, done that, and so glad I'm not back on that again. And then I assume you'll come back Sunday? After the thing's over, or?
Yep, I actually have to come back Sunday to go straight back to work.
Oh, that's going to be a good, fun, woo!
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Next, the weekend after that, we'll make sure not to disturb you and let you sleep it all off.
The weekend is when I work.
Oh, well. You have to get some sleep in there sometime. You know, the last time you were on, was the infamous Halon incident, and at my expense, you know, I don't mind throwing myself out there for the joke, but this time you had a deadly, deadly incident yourself. Didn't you have an incident? Did you want to share that with the class?
I don't know if I want to share it, but why not? I had my own deadly Halon incident about a week and a half ago, sitting down there in my office about 2 a.m, and the fire alarm system goes off.
Oh, you gotta love that.
And it happened, it's the first time it's happened, so it took me a couple seconds for anything to register. I'm like, what's that sound? And right about that time I realized what it was, so I'm a pretty big guy, so I take off with a full sprint toward the exit door, and unfortunately we have the proximity doors, the ones with motion detectors that unlock themselves, that are magnetic. Well, if you ever ran into one of those very quickly, you know that there's a little bit of latency between the time you pass the motion sensor and the time the door unlocks. Well, I rammed the big metal door at full speed, knocked myself right on my ass.
See, you were so blinding fast that the motion sensor, you were just like the Flash, man. You ran past
it
so quick.
It hurts, that's all I can say. Well, outside the door, and the engineers are standing there going, yeah. Sorry, we didn't really know anybody was here.
Now, how can they not know that somebody is, there's somebody there all the time? They should have known. They've set you up is what it was.
Probably. They had an interesting look on their face. They probably did set me up.
Yeah, did you confirm that the door sensor didn't go off? Maybe they were just at the other end with their shoulders against it to block it.
Well, the joy of this place is that those doors are so screwed up on the timing. I mean, every once in a while you'll go to the door and it'll take 5 seconds to open. So, But I don't know. They probably were.
Yeah.
Disabled the motion sensor on the door.
What about a power outage? If the doors are electronically unlocked, how do you get through in a power outage?
That I don't know, but we had a...
You could be trapped in there.
My post on the board about that. We did have a power outage probably, I guess, a month and a half ago now. And I was so traumatized because I was sitting in the pitch black. I didn't even move, so I don't know.
Yeah, I had that before. I've had the pitch black before in the middle of the night. And like when the Halon incident happened to me, it was like I was completely asleep. I was just sleepwalking for the most part. So I can very much relate. Very much relate. Now, luckily for me, when I hit the door, I pulled an O.J. Simpson spin move and ran out. You, unfortunately, pulled a... I don't know what you pulled. You hit a linebacker or something.
Exactly.
Well, so you have, to go with my deadly Halon, you have the deadly running into the door story. So that'll be archived forever in Binary Revolution Radio, episode 15. yeah, and, you know...
Just to confirm, yeah, the Halo is a scary thing. The Halon. Halon is a scary thing.
Yes, it is. We're joking, we're laughing, which we do a lot sometimes, but you actually told me something. I know this isn't a new thing that happened recently. I know we're talking about what we've been doing recently. But you told me something off the air earlier that I think maybe you should bring up, because a lot of people might not know this or be aware that this could happen. You were telling me about the drivers. Can you go back over that a little bit? The drivers you were trying to remove. You were working on.
Sure. Basically, I had a Radeon 9000 Pro video card for a while, and was deciding to run Linux on this box because this was my gaming box. It was the only Windows box in the house. And unfortunately, the AGP Dart, I believe it's what it's called in the kernel, support wasn't quite working for this specific chipset. It was an NVIDIA A7N8X motherboard. So, NVIDIA released a kernel patch, which was all good and well, except for the better drivers for the card were on a completely different kernel version than the patch was released for. So I decided to try to patch the kernel and then update, or patch the kernel with a driver update, and then patch it with a real patch to the newest kernel version, which at the time was 2.4.21. Well, between the two versions, they had changed the data structure on one of the, or changed the structure on one of the, they changed the structure of one of the structures in the kernel itself. So I decided, well, I'm good with C. I can handle changing this data structure around a little bit and making it work. Well, I got it to compile.
Right. What's the worst that could happen, right?
Exactly. I mean, it was a simple change. And well, what happened next was kind of scary. It came up, actually. It worked in X mode, and I'm like, great, and I got it working, my first kernel hack ever. Well, then I went to reboot it. The anything that was a console or text-based, like the BIOS screens, the post messages, hell, a console terminal, everything had this weird, like, mesh look. It was so bizarre. It actually damaged the card. I could take it and put it in different machines, and it would still have the same problem.
Wow. So you actually... Because of the driver, because of the hack that you did, you actually somehow damaged the hardware from that?
Exactly.
And that's really what we want to warn people, is that that can happen, I guess. You're controlling interaction between a piece of hardware and software. That's what the driver is for. It is software to allow communications between the operating system and the hardware. So I guess that means it can be bidirectional. You can send stuff to the hardware, which could be damaging, I guess. Is that...
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened.
Is that our theory of what happened there?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly can't explain how it happened. I've never thought it could happen that way, but sure enough did.
That seems like it. I don't know what else it could have... I mean, a total fluke, but I doubt it. I think it's what you said is right on the money. I think that's exactly what happened. So the moral of the story is, just use the factory default drivers, or you're going to be at risk of causing damage. Because I know, like you said, you're very proficient at C, you know what you're doing, and sometimes you just can't account for everything. So something must have slipped through.
There was a good side to it, though. I just had to replace the card and ended up buying a 9700 Pro. So.
Yeah, but then again, the bad side is you spent how much for the 9700?
$300, but we won't talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a 9000 in one of my boxes as well, and luckily I haven't had any problems with it, so that's a good thing. Let's move on to some news topics. I got a couple quick little things I want to touch on. Actually, this is not... I don't know how quick this is going to be. This is pretty serious. Since I mentioned my cyber law class, I've been focusing a lot more on issues that are related to law, things that need to be addressed, things that need to be talked about. And one of these things, and we've brought this up in our class, as well as on the show, and this is something a lot of people heard of, and that is licensing agreements, or EULA, E-U-L-A, End User License Agreement, Shrink Wrap Agreement, whatever you want to call it, tons of different names, but basically the agreement that you abide by when you purchase a piece of software. Particularly when you buy something off the shelf, which I know a lot of people, I don't know how much software is bought off the shelf much anymore with online ordering and downloading and stuff like that, but for this example, we'll say when you go buy something off a shelf, you go buy whatever it is. Actually, I have a specific story here I'm going to share with you, and this is not unique. You can find a lot of stories like this, but this particular one caught my eye, and this was from Network Associates. Someone went and bought a piece of their software, and this was a magazine actually, bought a piece of their software off the shelf to review it for their magazine. Well, buying software off the shelf, and even when you download it, you get that page of crap that nobody ever reads. You know, it's like pages long about what you can't do this, and copyright that, and you're not allowed to do this, and blah, blah, blah. Well, that is a bunch of legal mumbo-jumbo, but it does stand up in court, and that is what cyber law is all about, is teaching what that stuff means, why you need it, what you can and cannot do with it, and stuff like that. Well, most of these end-user license agreements have a lot of verbiage in there that gives them control. It's all about control. It's all about control. Gives them a lot of control over what you can and can't do with, and here's the key word, your software. Or is it their software? What you can and cannot do with the software that you download or buy. In this particular case, the Network Associates ended up suing a company because they gave a bad review on their software. In that end user license agreement, when you open that software, it says in there that you agree not to benchmark that software, and that's exactly what they did. They benchmarked it, compared it to other similar software packages, and posted the results and gave it a poor review, saying that it was the worst of the bunch. Network Associates filed suit against them, saying that they were not allowed to do that. They violated their licensing agreement by performing a benchmark. Now, I'm sure that if they would have been on the winning end, if they would have been the best software and they got the highest ranking, I bet you they wouldn't have sued. They would have overlooked it in that case. But because they were on the losing end of it, they were able to sue for breach of contract under that licensing agreement. So all those pages and all that stuff you see when you download stuff or when you sign up for anything, I mean, let's be realistic. Even I admit I don't read a lot of it. I read more than most people, especially if it's something serious or important. A lot of times I'll download stuff and don't care about that because what are they going to do? You know, how are they going to find me and what am I going to do with it? But they are really pushing their luck with what they can get away with in licensing agreements. And they've pushed it so far now that it's become an issue of free speech. Specifically, this Network Associates example. The magazine said that they have a right to free speech. They have a right to review the software and post their results. Yet, contract law is on the side of that software company, because when you open that software, you are agreeing to a contract with them to abide by those rules that they put on the front of the package. So you don't own the software, and this is something we've always complained about in the past, that you don't own the music that you buy. You're borrowing it. You have the right to listen to it, but you don't own it. You don't own the software anymore. You have the right to use the software. This is a fundamental problem because the law, A, is not written for that, and B, and this is, of course, an opinion situation, it shouldn't be. You should own that software. Again, that's my opinion. and I'm not going to get into a big soapbox about it, but do you think that they should have that much control in a licensing agreement? How do you feel about them telling you what you can and cannot do with the software and the actions that they can take against you if you violate them?
Well, I agree to a certain extent in which they can control what you do with their software, but not to that extent. I mean, that's infringing on their freedom of speech. I mean, it's almost ridiculous to even think about that. You know, a company could basically say, well, if you purchase our software, you can't speak bad of us. You know, that's pretty much what they're doing here.
That's exactly what they're doing here.
I mean, if Microsoft would have done that, and there's hell, we'd never have these problems.
Yeah, right.
We'd never know about them.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's a kind of, and this is not an isolated case. This is just one that caught my eye. You can go look and search, and you will find other examples about this. Another thing that they put in there all the time, and this is the one that really I have a big issue with. It always says, okay, now, like you said, there are some things that are okay, some things you expect and understand. You know, you expect when you get that license agreement that it says that you can't resell copies of the software. You can't make copies and resell it. You know, that makes sense. That's expected and understood. You know, people can debate whether or not, you know, the free software should be free and all that. That's not an issue, but it's not surprising to see that in a licensing agreement, do you think?
No, not at all.
That's something that's typical. And you can't take and modify it and put your name on it and resell it as a different, you know, stuff like that. Some stuff that's obvious. But one thing that they put in there is that one of the rules or one of the things that you cannot do once you get it is reverse engineer that software. You cannot decompile it. That's in almost every licensing agreement that you'll ever see or find. You do not have the right to decompile, reverse engineer that software. Now, ingenuity and invention in this country has a lot of dependence and foundation on reverse engineering. And hopefully next week, if I talk about my cyber law test, we actually had a question on there about reverse engineering. And it's very appropriate to this. I wish, gosh, now I'm thinking I should have saved this for next week. Maybe I'll bring it back up. But reverse engineering is how a lot of people learn how things are made and then improve on them. There are countries, Japan, Hong Kong, there are countries that have made their bread and butter on decompiling, reverse engineering, finding out how things work, and then improving them and making them better. You know, electronics. We, in the United States, come up with a lot of electronics breakthroughs that we never use, that we hardly take advantage of. We touch the surface. And these companies overseas will take it, pick up the ball and run with it, figure out how it works, and then actually apply it and create new products and stuff with it. So reverse engineering is very important to be able to do, and in these shrink wraps, they're taking that away. They're saying that you can't reverse engineer it. Now, like I said earlier, not being able to change it and sell it with your own name, you know, their exact code is one thing, but to see how it works, there's two issues there. One, you know, the issue of open source and knowing what's going on and what's behind the scenes, and B, a right to disclosure, to know what the program is doing and what it's accessing. I'm sorry, but I do not trust Microsoft. They tell me that no private or personal information is being transmitted, but how do I know that? I would like to have the option. Not that I would have the technical ability or the time to go down and go through all that code, but I would like to have the option and the opportunity and the right to look at that code to see if what they're telling me is true. And they take that away. That's one of the many things that they put in the end user license agreement as well. And there's a lot more that they put in there that I am going to save for the next time, but yeah, I'll bring this up next week. I'm going to try to talk about some of the questions and some of the things we've talked about in cyber law. We'll make next week the cyber law episode and talk about some of this kind of stuff. But for now, I'm going to move on to another topic. Did you have something you wanted to add about that?
Thing I wanted to add was it's almost like, and I've read articles on this before, and it's so true that over the last 20 years, technology for us is just increased so exponentially that law really doesn't know how to handle it. intrusions into systems, they're still iffy about. The thing, though, an analogy that I think would be good in this case, could you imagine a world if this continues in this way? Imagine a world you buy a car, and that car is completely under lock and key. You're not under the license agreement for that car. You can't open the hood. You can't do anything to it. You have to take it to a licensed dealer repair facility. I mean, that just seems the way, if we continue in this route, that it's going to go.
Now, that's an excellent analogy. If you couldn't fix your own car, figure out how your own car works and how to improve it, because, you know, I've mentioned briefly on the show, it's another topic I like to cover on the show one day, is how to hack your car, for lack of a better terms. There are people that modify their car and find many, just tons of ways to get more power out of it, to make it more efficient, to make changes to the car, and that's an excellent analogy that not only can you upgrade your car, can you make it better, can you improve it, but fix it. You know, just figure out how it's, you know, what's causing the problem and fixing it yourself instead of having to take it to a licensed dealer, just like you have to do with your, you know, you have a your laptop breaks down, you have to take it into an authorized repair center because you don't have the information to do it yourself. Well, yeah, I like that. That's a very good analogy. Very good. Hopefully we can talk on that more next week. I'm going to move into another copyright topic, although this is not, well, I'm not going to tie this into cyber law again, but let me pose this question to you. A database. Is a database something that can and should be copyrightable? It's a vague. I know it's a vague question, but can you copyright a database of, like for example, here's an example. How about the phone book? That is a huge database of phone numbers.
So we're talking about the data that resides within a database.
Well, you tell me.
I could see obviously copywriting the database software, but the database itself, the data that it holds, I don't think so. I mean,
does it depend on the nature of the data?
There's nothing really to copyright, in my opinion. I mean, it's a collection of data. It's not an idea. It's not, so it wouldn't fall under intellectual property.
Right. It would have to be a creative idea for copyright to really take effect. Creativity.
I mean, that's asking a question. Well, I've got this stack of paper. Technically, it's the same thing as a database. It's not in an electronic format. But, hell, the freaks out there with their freaking notebooks, technically, that's a database of your notes. Can you copyright that?
Well, and should you? Should you be able to?
To me, I say no. I mean, I can't imagine how they could even have a ground to even attempt it.
Well, all right, let me try to make a, let me play devil's advocate. Let me try to think of an example. What if you sat at home and, oh my gosh, I'd make an example on the spot. Let's say you sat at home and analyzed how many, you sit at home and you watch television every night for a week, and you sit there with a notebook and pen and the paper, and you pore over television, you count how many males and how many females are on television and their age brackets, and you gather up all this information so that you can sell it to a company for their marketing. And you're able to say to them, oh, you want to sell toys? Well, here, Saturday morning has the most children watching and has the most children on television. Or if you want to market to 20-somethings, you might want to try this night. You did this data that you found yourself by watching television. Should you be able to copyright that data that you just found?
I don't think it...
Or should you be forced to turn that over?
I don't think you should be able to copyright it, but I don't think that, for instance, if you sold it to, and I guess it comes back to user license agreement, if you sell it to someone, do they have the right to resell it?
Well, and you could, that would be a contract. That would be contract law. You would work up a contract for something like that. But the data itself, and that's kind of the fundamentals of this case. There is an act before Congress right now. It's called, this is like the longest name for an act. It's called the Database and Collections of Information Misappropriation Act. God, I want to buy a... There's so many vowels in that. I think I'd have to... I'd miss that one on... what is that show? Wheel of Fortune?
Yeah, there you go.
I'd never get that on Wheel of Fortune. the Database and Collections of Information Misappropriation Act. And what it basically means is the question that I just presented is, if a company takes time to create a database, should they be able to copyright that information? Now, the example I just gave, which I just made up, is based on public information. What you see on a television show, sitting there watching for a week, and you write it all down. Well, that is technically public information. Anyone could have watched that and written that stuff down. The fact that you did it is a credit, I guess, and you should be able to sell it or whatever, I guess. But copywriting it, you, by the letter of the law the way it is now, you cannot copyright public information. No matter how you format it, you can make it into a database, but the bottom line is it's still public information. Everybody can see and tell how much is there. Like a phone book. And that's really one of the first big cases about it, was that the phone companies made the phone book, and no one else could make a phone book. Well, that's public information. Phone numbers are available to anyone and everyone. And courts found that other companies were allowed to make phone books of public information. You can't have a copyright on public information. And that's what's going on here. If you were to make a database, there was an extract of public information. For example, you know, when you get, we've talked about targeted marketing before, targeted spam, targeted phone calls, sales calls. I recently purchased a car. That's public information. I registered that car. Registration is part of the government, part of the state, and that's publicly available to anyone.
And VeriSign knows all about it.
Oh, brother, don't even get me started on that. That information is public information and cannot be copywritten, no matter how much you format. Now, you can pay or you can take the time to create a database of only car owners in Florida or only homeowners in Tennessee or something like that, but can you copyright it? Do you have to share it? Is it something that you can protect legally? And that's what this act is saying. This act is trying to say that if it's basically wants to institute, and I mentioned this earlier in the show on a different topic, but again, it's another level of control. They want to put in more control for people to copyright these databases. What about a place like what about Google? What about Google? Google.com is a search engine full of public information. VeriSign, like you said, it's public information. Website addresses. Should Google be forced to share all that information? I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here. You're trying to see both sides of the story. It is public information. They should not be able to copyright that. Or should they?
I still say no, but in the case of Google, since Google knows everything and then they copyright that, then no, we're screwed.
Well, you know, and there's also another issue of, in that particular example, I would argue that they are making it publicly available because they are a search engine after all. You can go and search and get the information from them, so it's not like they're keeping it from anyone. They're not trying to copyright it per se. So I would say that it's still publicly available through them. So I don't think copyright is an issue. But what if they were to start charging for it? What if you had to pay a penny for every search that you did? Should they then be able to copyright that information, or should they be forced to share it with everyone else? So anyway, I kind of see what some of the thought process is, but I'm with you. I don't agree with it. I think it's just another level of control, and we already have way too many as it is, you know. So I hope this doesn't go through, although I don't know that I'd necessarily be opposed to something. If they were to do something, I don't know, come up with a happy medium.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, most hackers live by the philosophy that data should be free. All data should be free. Now, I'm not naive enough to believe that all data is ever going to be free, but this is one case where I think public information, no matter how much work Google put into it, no matter how much work these companies put into extracting that information out, fundamentally, it was public information to begin with, and I don't think it should be copyrightable.
Well, the one thing, and this is the reason why I doubt that this act would be passed. Could you imagine the chaos in trying to sort through that? Well, who owns this piece of, this type of database? Who owns this type?
Right, and no one can own data. Yeah, no one can own data. No one can own data. And this actually, I think it was 1999, maybe even earlier than that, they tried a similar act. It was, gosh, I do not remember. I'm on the spot here. I do not remember what it was called the last time they sent it through. Something about piracy. It had the piracy in the name of it. Something, anti-piracy act of something that was along the same lines. And it did get shot down. It did not pass successfully, and hopefully that happens in this case too. But apparently some people think it is worth creating an act over. So some people must be for it. And we know
a large stakes in things like Google.
Exactly. And you know, and this is where the corruption, and I'm not going to turn this into a big, everybody knows how anti-government I am sometimes. I'm not going to go off on it, but this is how situations arise. Now you've got special interest groups. I don't know Google. I'm not accusing them, but the potential exists for them to go and lobby and put some money in to make this happen, so that they're able to copyright their database.
That brings about an interesting question. Once the data is owned by a private company, then it's no longer public. So to have a database of public data would be almost a contradiction in itself.
Well, it could be easily defeated. That's why it's also kind of silly from a business standpoint to put too much effort into it. They're talking specifically, think of it as data mining.
Mm.
And that actually, since some people might not be familiar, I'm going to back up. Data warehousing and data mining. Data warehousing is the act of just building this huge database of every bit of information that you could possibly come up with. And, well, let's defer back to the phone book. Everybody's phone number around the world, and their names and their addresses and whatever information they collect. Huge database. A data warehouse. Well, in the state of Iowa, I've never used that one on the air, there's a good example. In the state of Iowa, they don't care about all the other states' phone numbers for the most part. The majority of people only care about what's inside the state or their surrounding areas. And what they will do is data mine that data warehouse to come up only with local specific data that would be of interest to Iowa. And that is the database in question. Yes, it's derived from public information, as you said, but it doesn't necessarily become private. It's based on public information, but it was work that was put into it to come up with this result, and do they have a right to copyright it just because they put in that work? Anybody else should also be able to go to that database and data mine themselves the exact same information anyway. So it's kind of a moot argument. It's kind of a silly thing to make a big deal out of because it can be recreated from public data. But that's really what they're getting at. When you do spend time, money, and effort as a company to data mine for information, like I said before, I bought a car recently. If they want to go and data mine anyone who's bought a car in the last 6 months, you know, they can do that. Should they be able to copyright it? No. Anybody else can do it anyway. They could also further data mine, well, who bought a Toyota? Who bought a Toyota in the state of Florida? Who bought from this particular dealer? Who bought the four-cylinder? Who bought the F-150 truck with the dual can? You know, they can data mine down to such precision that they feel, I guess, that by putting all that time and money in, that they should be able to own copyright to that information. And it just, logically and technically, doesn't seem like there's much fundamental basis there. So,
well, I'm willing to bet that VeriSign is probably one of the backers of this act. It's amazing how much private data they have. I don't know if you know how much that they have private information on you, but I have a great example. Earlier this year, I was having to go through some website, and they required me to go through VeriSign to verify my identity. So I call up their operator, and they're like, and their first question was, "All right, what's the account number for your student loan that you got earlier this year?"
What?
I nearly shit myself. I'm like, I don't know that. And I, how the hell do you know that? That was a private institution.
Oh, that's scary.
Seriously, they have a lot of private data that I don't know how they legally have.
Well, depending on what kind of student loan it was, if it was from the government, it is a matter of public record. So, but
actually,
the question is, why would they want it, and why would they have it? Why would they go looking for it?
Right. And that to me, that's pretty damn scary.
That's very scary. That's very scary. And I've mentioned before that American Express is very big about that. They keep a huge data mine, and they sell it out to advertisers focused on age groups and who buys electronics. Sure, we'll data mine you some information and sell it, but that's not public information. That's their user information. It's not publicly available, so that's a little bit different. Amazon.com, they're huge in data mining. They're one of the people that pushed ahead, one of the premier users of data mining. When you go to Amazon, they have such a huge warehouse of what you've looked at in the past. If you go there, you'll see, last time you're here, you looked at this, and you might also be interested in that. And people in your area also purchased this, and here's circles for that. They know.
Your neighbor next door just purchased this.
Exactly. And they keep in data mine, and they do, and they tie you to your neighbors. They tie you by location. They tie you by interest. They tie you by, and this did not happen to me because I don't buy a lot from Amazon. I buy some DVDs and books occasionally. I had a friend who bought a DVD player through them. And then Amazon knows that you have a player now and starts pushing DVDs to you that you'd be interested in. Or upgrades to that DVD player, modifications and things like that. They know what you buy, and they can start targeted marketing to you. Now, again, that's not public information, so it's a little bit different. But that is data mining at its best. That is what data mining is all about. Now, the question is not, like I said, the Amazons of the world, where they can do that with their data. You know, whether or not it's right or wrong is a whole different topic. But can you do that same thing with public data? And that's really what this act is about. So, hopefully that won't go through. I haven't heard anything on that in a week or so. So, I'll try to find out and see if we have some closure, but you know how these things can get dragged out and changed and modified, and it may end up being not even what it originally started as at some point. I'm going to touch on one more quick topic because I think we're actually out of time about now, maybe over. I saw an ad in one of my trade magazines for something called eBlaster. eBlaster, it's a software package from Spectre Soft. SPECTORSOFT.com that records keystrokes, emails, instant messages, both sides of the instant message, mind you, and forwards it to an address on a regular schedule. And this is marketed, this was in one of my trade magazines, marketed towards companies who want to watch what their employees are doing at work. They can monitor you and see what you're doing and who you're talking with and what you're doing online and stuff like that. Now, we've mentioned on the show and before, right or wrong, like it or not, companies do have a right to, a legal right, not a moral right, but a legal right to watch what you're doing online and to monitor you when you're on the clock. Anything that you do while you're working for them, any knowledge that you find, any inventions you make, you're doing it on behalf of the company, as an agent of the company, and they have the right to monitor that type of stuff. But the act of what they're doing, recording keystrokes, emails, forwarding them to a supervisor, or maybe just creating a database of everywhere you go and everything you do. Last time I checked, that was called a virus. And the virus itself is kind of sort of illegal. But I guess when you sell it as a software package like this, as monitoring, I guess that makes it okay.
Well, when you refer to it as a virus, it's not, I guess by definition, that is a type of virus, but that doesn't necessarily make it a virus. I guess that's where I would stand.
Yeah, it doesn't spread or propagate. You're right. But as far as what it does,
you install that does what it's supposed to do. So technically, I guess I wouldn't consider it a virus. But if it weren't the owner of the machine doing it, yeah, it would be completely illegal.
I assume that's what's happening with this, is the administrators are probably pushing it out to the boxes remotely. They probably push out a client. As a matter of fact, I think they even said that you could send it as an email attachment to your employees, and they even promoted it as disguised it as something else. When they execute it, it puts it on their box without them knowing about it. That's why the vision of a virus pops into my head. That's the same thing that hackers do all the time. We send here's this great screensaver, click on it, That's the way viruses spread. Well, that's what this is doing. It's more of a Trojan than a virus, I guess you want to call it that. And yes, it's controlled. It doesn't self-replicate.
Well,
so,
what's actually kind of funny is the company I was administrator for in Atlanta, we had a couple employees who were being watched for, I think, honestly, I can't remember what they were doing now, but my boss had me push out Sub 7 to their machine, and she would use that to monitor the employees.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of scary. Well, and you know, the other thing about this instant messaging, both sides. Okay, you have a right to watch the employee online and what he's doing and sending, but do they have a right to watch who, the other person that the person's talking to?
Well, if you take it to a lower level, it's still data on their network, and so they still own it. It doesn't matter how, you know, what, how it's coming in, or it doesn't matter what it is that they're viewing. If they decide to go look at their private banking information, the data that comes across their line belongs to them.
Well, I don't know. I think I would argue that I can sit here in my house with the proper equipment and pick up cell phone calls around my neighborhood. That doesn't make it my data that I automatically have the right to own and listen to and keep.
But technically it's the FCC's waves.
Well, see, that's a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, we'll leave that alone.
We won't go there, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. That I would debate that a lot. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. I mean, if the guys, you know, they have a right to monitor what someone else sends him. Well, okay, well, let's say that this was on your job. They were monitoring you, and you didn't know it, and you're talking to me in an instant message. If I mention or say something in an instant message conversation with you that could come back to get me in trouble or haunt me somehow or something personal or embarrassing that they now have on me, the potential for abuse there is phenomenal. That is a huge, huge invasion of privacy. If they want to save and monitor what you say, what you send out, sure. But what I send in, I don't know that I'm being monitored. It's kind of like recording a phone call. The person calling in doesn't know that our standards within the Stank household is to record all incoming phone calls. They don't know that. But that doesn't mean it's okay for me to record everything without disclosing it to them.
Right. I mean, I agree on the moral side of it, but
yeah,
when you take it to the technical level, that's, I guess, where it becomes kind of vague.
Yeah, and I do not know the answer to that. Do you know, as a matter of fact, that since, yet I agree with you, technically it is data on their network, but whether it was in, see, the way the nature of the internet is, all data passes through all other networks. That doesn't give you the right to sniff in and listen to it just because it's on your network. So I don't know what the actual, factual, legal right they have on that.
I guess if, for instance, an ISP, if an ISP in their license agreement says that they reserve the right to do that, I wouldn't see a reason why they couldn't. So there again, then they could sniff on that data. But legally, I think anything going across a private network is considered owned by that company. They can do with it what they will. I mean, I know some large companies that do, I think it's called packet, using packet vaults, basically storing every piece of data that comes across.
Well, that's a scary, scary, scary thought. If I send an email to my friend in California, I send an email to Duel, I send an email somewhere, it's going to hit 30 hops along the way or more. And who knows how many phone lines it crosses over, owned by how many companies. Every one of them has the right, because it is data on their network, they have the legal right to store it, capture it.
Again, I think they would probably have to specify in the user agreement.
But if they don't present me with that user agreement, I don't know where it's going, and it's different every time. So I don't know about that one. I'd like to find an answer to that one. If anybody out there knows the legalities of that, I would very much love to hear that, because I don't think, morally, I definitely say it's wrong, but I'm not sure that legally they can do that. I think there's too much of a gray area there that they, I think they would find on the side of the consumer, on the individuals in that case, or at least I'd like to hope so. But this brings up another topic, and this is a great point to end on. That is the reason that you use encryption. That's why you encrypt your data. That's why you encrypt everything that you send out, and everything that you receive, encrypt it so that, yeah, you can have the fucking packets. Oh, I almost made it through the show without cussing, I think. I think that was the first one. Darn it. You can have the packets, but good luck getting into them. If you want it that bad, have at it.
But that's one reason why, while I'm at work, for the large majority of the time when I have my laptop here, I'll actually use secure shell tunnels with a Fox proxy at my house and browse through my own home network. Because it's not that I'm browsing anything questionable, no kiddie porn, things like that, but, I mean, a lot of sites that I do go to could be considered objectionable by my boss, my boss's boss, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm in the same boat. But, hey, what are you going to do? All right, well, let's wrap it up here. I think we're well over. Let's jump. You know, 3 weeks in a row I'm going to do this. Actually, before I do you have any shout-outs you want to give out?
Just everybody on the boards.
All right, I'm going to give my shout-outs once again, 3 weeks in a row, Chicago Cubs. I don't care what people, you guys can laugh and make fun of me. Superstition exists in baseball. I've said it for 2 shows now, and the Cubs are still in there. They're up on the Marlins right now. Go Chicago Cubs. Mad shout outs. They're going to the World Series. First time since 1945. Cubs all the way, baby. Shout out Chicago Cubs. If you got any feedback, letters@benrev.com. And I think that will do it. Oh, wait a minute. Our closing music. Dirt from Shadow of the Locust, Silent Candle. Thank you, Voodoo Hal. I appreciate you doing the show once again. And I guess to the listeners, we will see you next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Later.
The silence of a candle burning in my room. The silence.
Got your heart looking dim. I've seen this happen to many men and many women. Trembling, low self-esteem, got the flame flickering. And once this happened, the traps have been set and the maggots have been let in. It's time to be forgetting, but thinking that God forgot you. As the devil holds up a hoop for you to jump through. Hard rock, solid sediment, and it's hard to break through. Stare into the eyes of doubt and turn into a stone statue. An ember struggling. The saliva from a demon's mouth turns a bonfire to nothing. Having you cry, please send something to deliver me from this. I got caught up in the abyss and struck with a pestilence. My soul cleaveth to dust and melt from the heaviness. Unnerved by the sound as the city crashes. Why Jesus suffered through 30 lashes. Blood and sweat removed from his divine spine. To add to my spineless dead man raised from a casket. But callousness rusted my progress under a basket. A hidden fluorescent lamp under a bed. I feel dead with insight from Christ. Locked in my forehead, my soul aching. A cardiac ransack. Crack gathers in my lungs from the smokestack. A pilgrim progress in the right path. But now treating John like cul-de-sac. As a foul spirit twists my direction in the pitch black.
It's a shame that I never want to spread his beautiful name to walk the streets. It's hard to explain why my speech doesn't reach the ears of lost souls. Too many years of shedding tears. How do I steer towards obedience without running over medians? I fear to be laughed at like comedians. A human chameleon is what I am, and I can't stand that. I do my best to stick out like Sammy Davis Jr. from the Rat Pack. What do I lack? An outer light like an eclipse or nothing to ignite. I fight with this inner voice that seems to amplify inside my mind. But I can't deny him, since he manifested in flesh, defeated death with one breath of life. No more silence, I call in silence. Look inside this candle as I burn with the timeless heat. Even if my wick seems to be weak, his wonderful presence appears to strengthen my feet, lengthen my reach. Only to illuminate the dark and lonely valley of life. This radiant light cuts through darkness like a sharp knife. It's a pattern that lies beyond in the circle of motion like the rings of Saturn. I'm a human lantern that was once pictured as a silent candle. Thank you.
I do, it's too deep. I'm a creeper, Radiohead, wondering what I'm doing here. I don't belong here, and lately it's become ever so clear. I try to find my place in this cold world and found none. So I died to this world, but dying made me feel numb and dumb. Deaf and blind, hands over ears, mouth and eyes. A monkey in the middle, caught between earth and sky. I try to let my light shine, but my flame flickers dim. At times almost fades, still I can feel its warm glow within. This since life was a fire, cold winds blow against my soul. So I rage against the dying of the light and won't let go. Lord, I know that I have failed you time and time again. If I transcend every obstacle, will I become a legend like Tenzin? I try to comprehend my purpose and why my surface seems to melt. How could a candle be so worthless? All I think's about myself. Why else could you have placed me on this earth but to excel? To stand that mountain, shout and seek heaven, forsake hell. My light whispers instead of yells, and no secrets I must tell. One day this frame will decay and this flame will burn and not be held.
I'm fragile, my heart breaks in the moment of my rest. You see, I'm nothing but a worm as I squirm through the valley of death. Just like Judas with the breath of lies, my own savior I've denied. I can see him stretched from my person as a curse, a thing in which he died. I've cried many times and I've sighed many times. I talk his talk without the walk, you can hear it in my rhymes. Visions of my enemy's flesh as I look at my own reflection. Manifest with no direction because I can't stand a subjection. God, can you hear my cry when I set my face towards the sky? Do I suffer in vain with pain? Is it simply strange to ask why? Is this sun really for me? Did it not die for my selfish habits? And please tell me, Lord, why I get mercy and all that I can't hack it? Will the answer lie in front of me? Am I just too blind to see it? I grasp the air with a silent stare. Your instructions to believe it. All I long to stand strong, proclaim your love, but I'm too weak. Now with this, you call me a mute. What we see and what we hear determine the things of which we speak. Out of the treasures of our hearts which we've stored our beliefs. What we seek is what we find, selfless pleasures for the day. We don't often lift our voices, we're ashamed of what we'll say. What we see and what we hear determine the things of which we speak. Out of the treasures of our hearts which we've stored up in heaps. What we seek is what we find, selfless pleasures for the day. We don't often lift our voices, we're ashamed of what we'll say. What we see and what we hear determine the things of which we speak. Out of the treasures of our hearts which we've stored up in heaps. What we seek is what we find, selfish pleasures for the day. We don't often lift our voices, we're ashamed of what we'll say. What we see is what we find, selfish pleasures. What we seek is what we find, selfish pleasures for the day. We don't often lift our voices, we're ashamed of what we'll say.
And the voice within the candle whispers of a timeless peace that lies beyond.